Good morning, everybody. It's afternoon. It's 2 seconds past noon here on the East Coast on April 19th, 2021. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening today. As you know, we're part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ACE-ed.org, ACE-ed.org. Our magazine is over there, called Equity and Access, which is wonderful. Just click on the magazine icon. It'll take you to the current issue. You can flip right through. It's an online journal for pre-K-12 educators. It's called Equity and Access. Again, ace-ed.org. All our podcasts are over there as well. We have an awful lot of them for you to listen to. Okay, and today we got another one for you. We're going to archive it there, right over there at ace-ed.org. Okay, we have a special guest today, Dr. Katie Anthes, who is the Commissioner of Education in Colorado, and she's been in that position since 2016, and she is respected, and we're going to talk to her in great detail about this. She has a commitment to diversity and developing solutions founded on a productive middle ground. The key word is productive, and today we're going to talk about transparency and inclusivity in education leadership. Who better than the Commissioner of Ed in Colorado, the Rocky Mountain State? Dr. Anthes, are you there? This is Larry Jacobs.
I am here. Thanks, Larry. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here today.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you for taking the time for what I'm sure is a busy time. How do you want me to address you? I'm going to give you some choices. Are you ready? Here they are.
Yes.
Dr. Anthes, Dr. Anthes, Commissioner Katie, Ms. Anthes, or just Doctor? Which would you like?
I am just fine with Katie. Thank you so much.
Katie, it shall be, and please call me Your Majesty. No, I'm just kidding. Call me Larry.
Okay.
It's that simple. Okay. Are you in Denver? Are you in Denver today?
I am in Denver. It's just starting to snow here again.
Get out. I was going to ask you what the weather is, for goodness sakes. It's snowing again.
Yeah, we have this roller coaster spring all the time where it's either 70 degrees or it's snowing.
Yeah, you're high
desert. But today
desert
it's snowing.
Yeah, you're high desert there. It melts tomorrow. It's 50 degrees. Okay,
exactly.
And you want to stop the show and go skiing, or should we just continue? What should we do?
I think we're good.
All right. And, Katie, what were you doing before you became commissioner? Okay, you've been there 5 years now. It's a lot.
Well, I was in the department in various roles prior to this. I've been at the Department of Education for about 10 years total.
Wow.
Yeah, and worked in policy, education policy before that at places I'm sure you're familiar with, like the Education Commission of the States and other places like that prior to.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. I assume your degree, I shouldn't say that, you have a PhD. Is it in education?
It is in public policy with
even better.
So
that brings a lot of stuff to your to the long term at the that's really important at the Commission on Education. It's really good.
Yeah.
Let me ask, okay, and the obvious question these days I ask everybody, okay, by the way, it is a pleasure to have you here. Okay, how are things going with COVID statewide?
Yeah, well, it's certainly,
with education,
as I'm sure all your guests have said, it's been a challenging year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've really, really had to be more flexible and more nimble than we've ever been. But, you know, I'm excited to say that the majority of our school districts are open to in-person learning. And actually, most of them have been open the whole time. You know, we have a heavy rural state, and so they have been able to figure out ways to stay open and do more social distancing. So a lot of our students have been in person the whole time. But our metro areas, just like around the country, have struggled a bit just because there's more kids, there's less space, and in general, there's higher COVID rates in the bigger cities. So, you know, it's been a roller coaster, but I think we're doing well, and I think folks are unfortunately getting the hang of this thing. And not that we wanted to practice this for over a year, but they have been, and so, you know, we're doing well and getting back into more consistent learning opportunities.
That's great. And I'll say this, just congratulations to all the folks who work in the schools in Colorado.
Absolutely.
They
have been working time.
Oh, man. They have been doing something. This goes to all the state. They've been doing something they were never trained for. And there is
absolutely
a difference between online or hybrid and all this sort of stuff, and then dealing with the emotional aspects of it, et cetera, et cetera. It's been a tough year. Congratulations to everybody in Colorado who's involved in education for doing this. I have to ask you something, which I just actually loved when I realized it. I was on the website, okay, for the Commissioner of Education in Colorado, which is, by the way, your website. All right? And I know this is interesting. Of course, we're going to talk about inclusivity and diversity and all that sort of thing. But your executive staff, and I actually looked up numbers on this, your executive staff, and I think it might be 100%. I'm not sure about Dana. Is Dana a female?
Yes.
Okay, so it's 100%. This is interesting. It's 100% female. You're obviously female as well. Like, that's your executive staff. Okay?
Yeah.
And I looked this up. About 87% of teachers are female. But let's just say a school superintendent, okay, that high administration, is 87% male.
All
right. So you probably knew that already, okay? So my point is, this is great because I was a teacher for years and I am male, but it is a female-dominated profession as teachers. And when you get into the administration of education, it tends to be more male-dominated, which is a very weird thing. And that's, of course, changing a little bit, but still, it was so male-dominated, it doesn't matter. Talk about that, the talent of your executive staff, and this is interesting, having women running the state's education, which is good, by the way.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we're really proud of that. And, you know, I think some changes have occurred, you know, over the past 5 or 6 years to make the administration and the highest levels of executive more women. I took the position and I was the first female commissioner in Colorado for 65 years.
Oh, my God.
Essentially the first one, except for the very first female commissioner ever in Colorado. So that was exciting. And
that is.
And then, right. And then, you know, as I took on the reins of the commissionership, you know, I looked across our teams and saw the amazing talent that we had, and they were female. Not that we don't have amazing male talent in our department as well.
Exactly. That's not the point. That's not the point.
Right. In terms of, you know, it is exciting to have, to have this leadership reflect the education system, and so that is great. I'd be remiss if I didn't say we have a lot of work to do on the other side of diversity.
We are
talking about that as a executive team, but also as a department, saying that we need far more people of color in the administrative and executive ranks, we have not hit that mark yet. We have missed that mark. So we have a focus on that as we think about, you know, the future and what it looks like. But, you know, we are really excited that we closed that gap on the female male.
Yeah, you did. And that creates a great role model situation, okay, for young ladies. Okay, it really does.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, and it's true, everybody wants a more diverse population that better reflects the entire population of the state, okay? But let me ask you, can the state, and I know districts try, can the state do anything to encourage people of color, which, by the way, is lacking these days, of getting into education? And my standing joke, Katie, is always every high school in the world has a career fair. Okay, you want to be a firefighter, you want to be a veterinarian, you want to be a plumber, but they always forget to have a booth for teachers.
I know.
It sucks.
It's
true. Well, so I'm glad everybody wants to be a plumber and a firefighter. That's open to everybody, okay? But we need teachers, and we need people of color teaching, and we need them administering schools, okay? And exactly. Colorado, like you said, I don't know what the percentage of black people is in the state, or people of color, I should say, okay? But we need more of them. And well, can the state do anything about that? Or is the state doing something about that?
Yeah. I mean, we are taking some steps on that. First of all, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, when I first became commissioner, as you become commissioner, you get automatic seats on certain boards across your state. And so I was on the Colorado workforce.
Good.
Yeah. More meetings.
Congratulations.
But I got a seat on the Colorado Workforce Development Board. And as I kind of sat and got my feet under me on those boards, I was like, we are never talking about education here. It is always businesses and industry and construction and all of those things we definitely need the workforce for. But I was like, here we are, you know, 5 years ago in a shortage for workforce for education and especially diversity in education, and we're not talking about it. So we did kind of change and add to the Colorado Workforce Development Council a whole sort of strategic area around education, because my argument was, if we don't have the best and brightest in education, none of your other workforce needs are going to be met. We really want teachers, we want the best and brightest in teachers, and then they can prepare all of those students for STEM fields and business fields and construction fields and plumbing fields. And so we have changed. We have a whole initiative called Teach Colorado. We're doing TSA campaigns. We have been a part of a system on how we reach out to diverse communities, because I don't think we've done a good job of that. Reaching out, going to the communities and getting them excited about education. We are starting to do that now. And so we are putting we have a thing in Colorado called Talent Found, which is the workforce report. We now include the education workforce in that. So I think we have made some progress, and we are really going to use the COVID crisis as an opportunity, because obviously a lot of people have lost work in the service industries, but a lot of those people are young and up and coming, and they want to contribute to society, and what better way to do that than to go into teaching. So we're targeting those folks with our Teach Colorado platform to say, hey, this is a great career, and we can help you with our alternative pathways to get you certified and into teaching.
Wow, and a beautiful state, I might add. There's not anybody who doesn't like Colorado.
Exactly.
Okay, everybody likes Colorado. Colorado is one of those popular states. Okay? It's
a
cool state.
We're lucky.
It's beautiful.
Cool,
it's pretty, you know, you go right down the list. Yeah. Okay? It's a good place. Okay? Mm-hmm. You were in public policy. You were in the department for years, and you became the commissioner of education. It was 5 years now. Okay, you've been the commissioner of education. You weren't a leader before. You were, but let me just phrase it that way: full leader before. You weren't Chairman Mao before. Now you are.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've had 5 years now. Okay, and you have the double duty of coming up through the ranks, and then also, as we talked about before, being a woman, one of the first women, really, to do this since Wyatt Earp. Let's be honest, okay? Really, Mrs. Earp didn't get the job, okay? So when you talk about leadership and policy, you're an expert on those two things now. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? What'd you learn? Yeah, you're welcome. What do you say from you learned from the pandemic and how that's going to affect what you're going to do in the future?
Yeah. Well, I have always in my time in work, one of my guiding principles has been responsiveness. And especially when you study public policy and you study government and public administration, you hear a lot of those old cliches, right, of like, oh, government workers don't respond, or, oh, the government's not, you know, they're just a bunch of deadbeats, or they don't do work, or whatever, you know, whatever those stereotypes are. And it has sort of been my mission in life to show the world how hard government workers work.
They do work
and
hard.
And if nothing else, in this pandemic, this has really shown. I mean, it's like around the clock, over weekends, all the time. But one of the things you have to do to change that narrative is respond, right? I mean, so pandemic, none of us have done this before. And so we didn't have all the answers, and I didn't have all the answers as commissioner, but we'll go to the leader to find the answers. And so one of my core values still, even if I didn't know the answers, was to respond. I mean, the hundreds and thousands of emails that we get, even if it's from a parent, you know, or a, you know, I mean, just anybody who's like, why, you know, why do we have these guidelines, or why do we have to wear masks, or what is my school district doing different? Like, even if we don't know the answer, You write an email back.
You respond.
Say, thank you so much for your feedback. We understand you're frustrated. We understand we all don't know what's going on, but we're working through it together, you know, and it's amazing how much just those little things can do. I have had so many emails this year saying, oh my gosh, somebody actually responded to me. Like, I appreciate, even though you didn't have the answer, you heard me. So responsiveness is one thing, and if you don't know the answer, don't pretend like you do, because we had to prepare our schools and our systems and our teachers and our parents for the unknowable, and so it's better to mentally prepare them for that than to give false information or false hope. So we say, listen, we don't exactly know where this virus is going to go. We don't exactly know what the guidelines are going to be 4 weeks from now, but we're going to promise to communicate with you. We're going to promise to tell you as soon as we know, and we're going to work through it together.
What was the major concern that they wrote about? That when you think back on this, what was the major concern? There must have been one thing that floated to the top.
Well, there were, it really actually fell along two lines, and this is the hard thing about being in public service during this moment. Either there was deep fear, and it has evolved over the year, but there was either deep fear about having schools reopen, so teachers a lot would be sending us, like, I don't want to go back, I'm scared, I'm worried for my health. Please don't open schools right now. We don't know the implications. And then on the other side of the fence, we would have parents saying, you have to open schools. I can't manage this anymore. I need my kids back in school. My kids are having mental health issues. We're worried about them. So we had two really different views. And so we always had to kind of, it goes back to that common sense approach, like that common sense middle ground. Like, how do you navigate two very, both totally valid.
Exactly.
Both completely and totally valid. But there's not a perfect answer. There's not a perfect answer. And so how do you navigate that? So that's, you know, really where communication, transparency, and just being honest about what we know and what we don't know, and saying, listen, I know this isn't the perfect answer. I know this isn't satisfying all of the needs you have right now, and I'm sorry. But this is where we are right at the moment, and we're going to keep trying to get better. We're going to keep trying to learn more, and we're going to, you know, do the best to get through this together.
That was a great answer. That is a great leadership tip. Okay, just be honest and answer the question. Do the best you can in answering the questions, and don't give them a load of junk, okay, and a load of gobbledygook that makes no sense at all. I mean, that works for all the time. This is going to be an odd question. I'm going to call it learning loss, and I like to say that there's a difference, in my opinion, between curriculum loss and learning loss. Okay, mm-hmm. If kids are learning, we can afford to, if I taught social studies, they may have to miss the period between 1940 and 1970
mm-hmm.
at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're teaching them to learn and they're learning what we've taught them, that matters less. Okay, they can read about that or watch PBS, okay, when they grow up
mm-hmm.
and figure
mm-hmm.
it out. Okay, but,
yep.
you know, when you as the commissioner look at learning loss, and this goes into state testing and all that. Well, what's going
mm-hmm.
on with that? And we're just put the status of it for Colorado,
yeah.
for what you know. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we, and I think you're right to point out that sort of nuance in how we say learning loss, because our students are learning a ton.
Exactly.
They're learning a
somebody
ton
said
about
to me,
technology.
Yeah, and somebody said to me, everybody's saying the kids
yeah.
are behind. And my question is, behind
yeah.
who? Everybody's behind. It doesn't,
right.
they're even again.
Right.
The horses are even
right.
in the race. Yeah, we hope.
We'll
talk about that in a minute.
And what,
yeah.
Yeah, what different types of things are they learning? They're learning resiliency and
yep.
and time management and how to log on and how to be engaged in a different platform and blah, you know, all of those things. But we do talk about, you know, I do think over this year there has been sort of opportunity loss. And it
oh, yeah.
varies across our districts. So we do have some districts that have barely been in person all year. And you know, our superintendents and our administrators, for their best efforts, and their efforts have been heroic, you know, are saying they, you know, we have lost some engagement with students. We have lost some connection. We have lost some opportunities for them to learn the material. And so we do need to address that with our, you know, American Rescue Plan dollars.
Yep.
We
yep.
do need to give some flexibility to districts to say they know what happened in their school district this year. So they should, you know, use those dollars to target the needs that they have. But we do want it to be focused on, you know, bringing back some of those opportunities that were lost over this year. And so, you know, we need to see, you know, we will have some state assessments this year. We need to see what did occur during learning. And we do want our students to be prepared for the next grade level. And we do want them to have access to that material. So we want to focus on that. But we also want our districts to have some flexibility in using those funds to support, because as I said, some of our rural districts have been in person all year. So for them, they may have some different needs in that respect.
Yeah, and you know, what you just said struck me as very interesting. Well, a lot of things you're saying strike me as interesting, but that in particular, because with this, when we say the state assessment test, we're always
mm-hmm.
thinking, oh, we're going to assess the kids, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But this next, the tests this year are not really assessing the kids per se.
Mm-hmm.
I hope.
Mm-hmm.
They're assessing what happened. What did they learn last
yeah.
year? Not so much for a
right.
grade, but so we have some actual data so we know what they need next year. It's
exactly.
really a different informational set. Okay?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. It's not the same. And that's why we're happy that we have taken away the accountability side of the state assessment, you know, so that our districts really don't have to worry about that. We just want to know what happened. You know, we want to know what that looks like. And I know that's a, you know, sticky topic, but with the state assessments and how passionate people are on either side of that. But you know, for me, it's still important that we have a broad, higher-level sense of what occurred this
exactly.
last year.
Exactly. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can do it anecdotally till we're blue in the face. Okay?
Right.
But as you said, some kids have excelled this past year, okay?
Yep.
And there is learning going on, okay? And we have
mm-hmm.
to measure that so we know what the teach them next year. If we don't have that information, because
mm-hmm.
for too long education has reacted very anecdotally, okay? And we need
yeah.
data points,
mm-hmm.
especially this year. And you're a public
mm-hmm.
policy person, so you love data. I can guarantee you that.
Yep,
am I right?
I do.
I had that feeling. Okay. Talk about the – and we were talking about it before, but a different thing. A lot of your districts, and I know Denver fairly well. I think Cherry Creek is really an upscale part of the world, right?
Some parts of Cherry Creek.
I remember going to Cherry Creek a lot, okay? And Red Rocks and all that sort of stuff. There are some wonderful places. But in the cities and wherever else, and you said the state is rural, we had broadband problems. We had equity problems where people, well, six kids were sharing the same computer with not enough broadband anyway. Okay, that sort of stuff. Okay, so we couldn't expect the kids weren't in school, all right, for a lot of it, for a lot of kids. So from the equity point of view, okay, in that regard, okay, what happened this year in Colorado? How'd you do? How did they handle it? What was the situation with all that?
Yeah.
And that was that was everywhere. I'm just talking to you because you're Colorado. Yeah, that was everywhere.
Right, definitely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think we realized, you know, real quickly that internet access and devices are an essential school supply now.
We
used to talk about, like, hey, is your district a one-on-one district with one, device for every student? And some districts would be and others wouldn't. And I think we've just realized now that that has got to be an essential school supply. And so we're, just like every other state, are not there yet. Very quickly, we did allocate, early on in the pandemic, $2 million, which is a drop in the bucket to solve this problem. It didn't solve the problem, but what it did is allowed for, districts to buy more devices that didn't have them. And then we did develop some partnerships with internet providers, to try to get low cost hotspots and, other things for places that don't have that strong internet connection. Now, even that didn't solve the problem. We still have some districts that, like, even hotspots don't work, because of mountain passes and divides and all sorts
things. That's right.
So it needs to be a much bigger, huge infrastructure issue for the country, because even these, our legislature then later in the pandemic allocated $20 million more. So, we now have $22 million to deal with the internet access and the device issues. But again, it's still some districts that have such little infrastructure, hotspots only go so far, and sometimes they don't even work in the rural mountain areas.
Yep.
So I think it's more in the billions where you start solving that problem.
Your line of the $2 million reminded me of Austin Powers, where Dr. Evil says that he's going to bribe the whole world and it will cost you, and there's a big dramatic pause, and he says $1 million, and they all look at each other, and they have that in pocket change. Okay, Dr. Evil, there's been a little bit of inflation here. Okay, I meant $100 million, and it's the same thing. Okay, and I have a friend, a good friend. There was a big ed service agency called KVEC in eastern Kentucky, which is all the mountain hollers and all that sort of stuff. And they go through the hammers of hell with this. Okay, getting broadband to these kids is just unbelievable. Okay, and it's so hard to do. And we just have to do it. And by the way, though we didn't think we would ever really need it in this regard, we kept pushing this stuff under the rug. And the pandemic really helped to lift the rug, shall we say?
Yeah,
and say, we can't do this anymore. And your line about technology being an essential school supply, it drives me nuts when people say we're going to talk about ed tech. And I always say to them, well, we never talked about ed chalk. And we never talked about Ed Blackboard.
Or number two, pencils and,
the
notebooks.
And technology is education now. That's the tool.
Yep.
Okay?
If we have that as an essential school supply, think about how how much we can improve into the future, because then we have, then if all of our kids have that, they have so much more access to supplemental learning that they didn't have before. And now, whether we like it or not, we've gotten a lot better at it. We've gotten a lot better at downloading new coursework. And now we can actually say, hey, there is an amazing physics teacher in, you know, Utah, and and he, you know, does this amazing stuff, and we're actually going to bring him in for one of these courses. And, you know, maybe in our small rural town in Colorado, they don't have access to a physics teacher.
Exactly.
Well, now we can actually start to see some of this
come
to life, because we've talked about it for 20
years.
We
can do it.
But,
we can do
but
it.
But now we know
kept putting
we can
it off.
Do it. We've seen it.
And, you know, I use the same argument. I live in Maine. Okay, but I live in southern Maine, and people think all the New England states are little tiny states, okay? But this state, it takes me 8 hours to go to the top of Maine, okay?
Yeah.
This is the big state, okay? People don't realize that. And there are people that live there along the Canadian border in these tiny towns, and believe me, you don't have that top physics teacher, okay?
Right.
And I've been arguing for years that it's online that physics teacher is available.
Right.
Okay, and we have to use everything. And there's no reason in the world why kids in what's called Aroostook County, okay, should have any different opportunity for education than the kids who live in Portland. Yeah. All right, and
for
it's the same thing between Denver and name a town. Go ahead, what name a town? What's in southern?
Yeah,
southern
East Colorado. East
there you
Colorado.
Go.
Eastern, southeastern Colorado. Yeah.
There you go. Which most people forget. Yeah. That's the Four Corners, right? That's the Four Corners, right?
Yeah. No, that's on the
Wrong way. Wrong way. Did I go the
wrong
way? Southeastern.
Wrong way.
I meant southwest. I was thinking southwest.
It's
very sorry about
small.
That.
It's like a stoplight. In fact, I don't even think they have a stoplight.
Well, here in the little town I live in, we don't have a stoplight either. Okay?
Right, right.
And it's pretty rural, I got to tell you, even though I'm 40 minutes from Portland. It's just, you know, it's just amazing. And all these things, and this is amazing. We knew this. We knew this. We knew it.
Yeah, we
okay,
did.
Those kids in need still needed that physics teacher. Okay?
Yeah.
But for some reason, we flumped it under the rug. We don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Guys, the prediction for next year before we leave, Katie? The prediction from,
you know,
here it is, the prediction from the commissioner.
I know. You know, I think that we are going to maybe do some solidifying of our learning over the last year. Last year has been such a response to the crisis, and hopefully next year will be a what did we learn from the crisis?
Yep.
Like how can we, I mean, that's what we're trying to do at the department level, is saying what policies actually need to change. Like now that we saw this year, like maybe we do need to start thinking about how we fund students for seat time. Maybe seat time looks differently now.
Exactly.
You know. There are policies that we have had to change on a temporary basis, and now we need to look back at those policies and say, should they be changed on a permanent basis? And how do we integrate this new flexibility and new nimbleness that we have with hybrid approaches to learning and being able to access teachers anywhere and being able to access coursework anywhere? How do we integrate that so that we expand the opportunities for all of our students? And so I'm really excited for the learning agenda next year.
That's a great way to look at it. That's a wonderful way to look at it. Let's talk about the learning. Dr. Katie Anthes, you are incredible. Thank you so much for sharing some of your busy day with us. We love it. Thank you.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much.
It was mine as well, Katie, and good luck with everything out there. And you live in a beautiful place, and go cross-country skiing today.
Absolutely.
Is it still snowing?
It looks like it's kind of let up, but we're supposed to get 6 inches tonight, so I think it's going to start in earnest later today.
Wow, that's Ernest, Colorado?
Yeah.
That's a joke. Bad joke.
Yeah.
You don't have to actually laugh at that one. Okay, I appreciate this. I really do. Just stay warm. Spring's coming. Okay? And
thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Katie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Everybody, wasn't she terrific? Wow. Lucky state. Katie Anthes, Dr. Katie Anthes, who's the Commissioner of Education in Colorado, doing good stuff, and she's got things under control. It's good. Good stuff. All right, we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. Our Consortium for Equity and Education, join with us. Go over and look at our magazine. Everything we do there is free. You'll love it. And we'll archive this podcast over there as well. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on April 19th. Thank you so much, Dr. Anthus, and thank you, everybody, for listening.